This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. Last month, over 500 Rohingya refugees broke free from a detention center in Sungai Bakap. Over the following days, 467 refugees were re-detained in a continuous effort by the Malaysian government to find and arrest these refugees. While some members of the public celebrated the government's efforts, many questioned why displaced people escaping genocide are kept in cells in the first place. Joining me on the show today to discuss this is Hannah Jambunathan, Community and Engagement Officer at the International Detention Coalition, also known as IDC. Welcome to the show, Hannah. Before we get into the topic, tell me a little bit about IDC.
Hi, Dashrin. Thanks so much for having me. So IDC, International Detention Coalition, is a powerful global network of over 400 organizations, group individuals, and we're based in over 100 countries. And we're all working towards a world where immigration detention no longer exists and that people who migrate live with rights and dignity. So today, I'll be speaking from the perspective of a global organization staff member. And we really believe that in terms of on-ground local context, that our local partners within the End Child Detention Network would be best positioned to provide that context.
Okay, so now let's get into the topic, Hannah. Last month, over 500 refugees broke out from a detention center here in Malaysia. Remind us again what exactly happened.
So in the early hours, about a month ago, 20th April, over 500 Rohingya refugees, including 97 women, 294 men, and 137 children, escaped from a detention center in Sungai Bakap. It's in the north of Malaysia. It was later confirmed that seven of those who fled were killed in a really tragic traffic accident, and three of them were very young children. And over the following days and weeks, at least 467, I think, of them were re-detained. And there's still a continuing effort by government authorities to find and arrest the remaining refugees.
Do we have any idea why these refugees escaped from their detention centres?
The truthful answer is that nobody knows. Mm-hmm. I believe that multiple news outlets were reporting that the riot was triggered by the death of a fellow refugee who had been denied or been just not given the necessary medical treatment when he was ill. But these reports, of course, have not been confirmed. And there have also been sources reporting that the conditions at the detention center were inhumane, which led to the breakout. But these reports have been refuted by the Immigration Director General and the Home Minister. But I just wanted to say my inability or my uncertainty in answering this question is actually indicates a larger problem or issue. It's that there's no clear or transparent information being shared with people, with NGOs, right, let alone the public, and organizations like UNHCR, who, you know, are key service providers to ensure the protection of refugees and detainees, have been denied access for years. So really, no one truly knows what's happening within these detention centers. And because of that, and it leads into that also, there's no public scrutiny about the use of immigration detention.
For those who are unclear, and I want to ask this because these terms are sometimes inaccurately used interchangeably, but I think it's important to know this, especially for the topic that we are discussing. What is the difference between a refugee, which we are referring to, and a migrant?
This actually comes up a lot in work conversations and also just personal conversations. Mm-hmm. It is a difference that many people don't understand. So migrants is kind of that kind of umbrella term, and it's essentially people who live outside their own country of origin.
Right.
And refugees are people who have fled their own country because they are at risk there of serious human rights violation and persecution and harm. And I'm going to throw in a third definition here, but that's the term asylum seekers. And that's people who have left their country seeking protection, but they haven't yet been legally recognized as a refugee and is waiting to receive a decision on that claim for asylum. But Malaysia here, we don't legally recognize refugees. And I think that's also a reason why the terms are so often used interchangeably. But I think what's really important to understand is that often people and their experiences don't fit perfectly into one of the above categories. It's like their reality is a lot more complex than that. So really, when talking about it, it's just most important and most critical to remember that these differences in terms or categories don't make someone more worthy of protection than another. Everyone has rights and everyone should have access to them just by virtue of being human.
Now, talk to me about the realities refugees face in Malaysia. Why are they detained in the first place? And how many people are in detention right now?
Okay, so refugees are detained because, unlike many, many other countries, Malaysia doesn't have a legal framework that protects them and provides them with legal status in Malaysia. So as a result, and this is very contrary to international and regional norms, Malaysia treats refugees the same as anyone who violates the Immigration Act, which means that they can be arrested, detained, fined, and or whipped. And I think in terms of how many people are in detention right now, we've actually got pretty recent data on that. I think on the 26th of April, the immigration DG, Datuk Sri Khairul Zaimi, reported that there were about 17,634 migrants in immigration detention centres nationwide, which include, very, very sadly, 1,528 children.
Right. So what I find a little bit confusing is that we know that there are, for example, NGOs on the ground who do great work with refugees. They conduct classes for them, trying to empower the community, help them in different ways, and so on and so forth. But at the same time, you're saying that, you know, because we don't have a legal framework, refugees or asylum seekers are essentially just treated like anybody who comes into the country, you know, breaking certain immigration laws or whatnot. So just to be clear, why are some refugees in detention centers while other refugees can go for classes and things like that?
So this is a hard question to answer because there's no, again, there's no clear picture to paint. There's no clear framework to understand this. Mm-hmm. But I think a helpful piece of information to know is that according to government policy, UNHCR cardholders, so that means people who are registered with the UNHCR, are not meant to be detained. But implementation of this is really erratic and it's also unverifiable. And further to that, because UNHCR has been denied access to immigration detention centres for so long, they're unable to register more people. So of course you have some people who are UNHCR cardholders allowed to go for classes or not being detained, whereas sometimes the refugees in the detention centres are still UNHCR cardholders as well. It is confusing, but there is no clear answer to that. I'm sorry.
No, but I guess therein lies the big problem, right? It goes back to what you brought up
exactly.
Earlier about transparency and nobody exactly knows what exactly is going on. Sometimes the law says some things, implementation is another thing. We don't have data, but very detailed data to scrutinize. Yeah. And that becomes a big challenge for a lot of people. Now, but as far as you know, right, Hannah, what happens after these refugees are kept in detention centres? What's the end goal here? Is there even an end goal? They come to our shore seeking help, seeking asylum, seeking refuge. A lot of them get, kept in detention centres. They are detained. What's the purpose and what's the end goal of doing this?
Oh, Dashan, you're really not going to like my answer here because it's it's that truly, again, we don't have clear answers to it, but I do have more information to paint a better picture for this one. So yes, let's start with that, right? Immigration processes are not made clear to the public. And it's often what we hear is that staff, like implementing staff and stakeholders, are given contradictory information. So there is no clear understanding of what that step-by-step process is after someone has been detained. But for a big picture kind of understanding, it's reported that a large number of refugees, especially Rohingya refugees, are held indefinitely in immigration detention centres without any possibility of release, right? And this, again, of course, has been compounded by the fact that UNHCR doesn't have access since, I think, 2019 now. And I think with the reference to the Sungai Bakap incident, Home Minister Hamza Zainuddin stated that the refugees at the Sungai Bakap detention centres had been detained for over 2 years now, and they can't be deported. So that they are being detained indefinitely. And another terrifying statistic is that recently the Home Ministry reported that between 2018 and February 2022, there has been 208 recorded deaths in immigration detention for a variety of reasons. COVID-19, it's terrible, and it's heartbreaking. And what's the follow-up from it? Yeah, so the reasons that the Home Ministry cited for the deaths were COVID-19, tuberculosis, septic shock, lung failure, organ failure, heart complications, dengue, diabetes, breathing difficulties, and among others. The list goes on and on. So attention needs to be paid to what happens within immigration detention centres, and if we think that immigration detention is an effective means of managing migration.
And just a quick follow-up to that, right? A lot of what the, you listed what the Home Minister pretty much said, and he's saying that, you know, a lot of, most of these cases, the people who dies, like dengue and various diseases, how are these people getting, how are the refugees getting diseases when they're kept in detention centers? Do they not have access to healthcare and things like that?
The processes and access to healthcare does sometimes differ from like immigration depot to immigration depot. There are organizations like Doctors Without Borders who do have some access, though limited, to provide medical support. But other than that, it's really not clear about what access to healthcare looks like. But given that there have been 208 deaths, we can't imagine it looks comprehensive. So I think just the kind of overarching, before we talk more about like detailed solutions, but just in all the questions that you've asked me so far, it's so obvious that all of us, the public, NGOs, the government, media, we all definitely need a lot more transparency about what immigration policies are and what the procedures are around that.
On the show with me today is Hannah Jambunathan, community and engagement organizer at the International Detention Coalition. After the break, I ask her for suggestions on how we can improve our refugee-centric policies in Malaysia. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Hannah Jambunathan, community and engagement organizer at the International Detention Coalition, and we're discussing the improvements we need to see in our refugee detention policies. So, Hannah,
talk to me about the impact of these detention centers, or, you know, impact of detention in and of itself towards refugee detainees.
So, there have been many studies, especially like global clinical studies, and they are very clear on the impact of detention and that it's really damaging and has really enduring effects on individuals. And these effects can be really debilitating physical and mental health consequences that can carry on way beyond the period of detention. And some people can even feel it for an entire lifetime. I'd like to maybe specifically highlight the effects that immigration detention has on children, and that it has a really negative impact on children. As you can imagine, children are that much more vulnerable than adults, and being in immigration detention can really undermine their physical health, their psychological health, and compromise their development. And studies have shown that children who are detained are at higher risk of suffering depression, anxiety, and emotional and behavioral problems. And that risk increases the longer they spend in detention. And in many countries, especially in Malaysia, immigration detention facilities are obviously not up to international standards, and there's a lack of services that are needed for a child's health and well-being and development, like you mentioned earlier, healthcare, education, and even like recreation and play. These are facilities that are key to a child's development that are not accessible in a detention centre. And finally, one of the most detrimental effects immigration detention can have on a child is that they separate children from their parents often, and they don't have access to their family. and they don't have access to grow and develop in a nurturing environment, which is just a huge injustice.
Absolutely. Is there anything Malaysia can learn from neighboring countries, especially in ASEAN, when it comes to detention of refugees?
For sure. Malaysia is continually lagging behind our closest neighbors in ASEAN, Thailand and Indonesia. In 2018, Indonesia effectively ended the practice of detaining refugees and people seeking asylum based on the immigration status. So what Indonesia is doing is actually a great example of an ATD program, which is an alternative to detention. The local government in Aceh has set up a task force to manage emergency response. So these processes link refugee communities to support from organizations like IOM, UNHCR, the Getanew Foundation, JRS Indonesia, and other organizations until the national government can advise which cities they'll be transferred to for ongoing accommodation and support. And other countries also have made significant progress towards ending child immigration detention specifically. And this is where Malaysia's slow progress is really evident. In Thailand, the Thai government has released hundreds of children from immigration detention since 2020 into community-based care. And they've done this after signing a MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, on alternatives to detention.
What does community-based care mean?
So community-based care is an alternative to detention. It's one of the alternatives to immigration detention. And it's basically setting up a system, and it's difficult to envisage because Malaysia doesn't have it, but it's setting up a system which allows for more integration into the community rather than being held in a detention center.
Right.
So, and these community-based models actually can benefit both the host community as well as the migrant community. And you know what? They're also really cost-effective.
Let's talk a little bit about some solutions, because in your joint statement, IDC's joint statement with APHR, Forum Asia, as well as the Asia-Pacific Refugee Rights Network, you guys provided 7 key suggestions for the Malaysian government. What are these suggestions?
Okay, so first is to carry out a comprehensive review of the current policies and practices of immigration detention in Malaysia and make sure that these are in line with international legal standards. The second, which is the theme of our conversation so far, is to ensure full transparency of the investigation and review and make the process and the results available and accessible to the public for our knowledge. Right. To proceed with the immediate implementation of the ATD pilot, which is the Alternatives to Detention pilot, which was officially launched in February 2022, and ensure that Rohingya children are included within the scope of this pilot because they are currently excluded. The fourth one is to, while doing all of this, to simultaneously take immediate steps to enact legal and policy change that ensures that children are no longer detained for migration-related reasons. The fifth one is to follow through on the pledges that Malaysia has made to gain a seat on the United Nations Human Rights Council, specifically the pledge to implement policies and legislations that promote and protect the rights of the most vulnerable communities, which indisputably include refugees, people seeking asylum, and stateless people, especially women and children. Now the sixth one is to immediately release all persons registered with UNHCR for immigration detention and grant UNHCR access to continue registration of persons of concern. And the final one is to grant access to Doctors Without Borders Malaysia and other NGOs to immigration detention centres to ensure that detainees have access to medical treatment and support services.
What is ATD pilot? What is that all about?
So the Malaysian ATD pilot is a really important thing to highlight. So in February 2022, the Malaysian government launched the Alternatives to Detention pilot program. So this pilot program is anchored by the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, as well as the Ministry of Home Affairs. What this pilot aims to do is to provide temporary shelter for unaccompanied and separated children under detention. And it acknowledges the serious harms that I was listing off earlier that children face in immigration detention and focuses on prioritizing the physical and mental health development of children. However, the ATD pilot has yet to be implemented or progressed very far because no children have been released yet. And as I shared the stats with you earlier, thousands remain in Malaysia's immigration depots. The ETD pilot is a really good step in the right direction, but certain conditions of its implementation, such as a continued focus on deportation and the exclusion of Rohingya children and restricting release of children to only 5 children at a time, really keeps it from being a really comprehensive and effective solution.
Right. And you brought up this term deportation, right? And for a lot of listeners, whenever they hear that the government, is deporting refugees to their home countries and all, they're like, oh, that's good word. Okay, they're not in detention centers, they're being deported. Tell me why this is a problem, especially when it comes to the community we are focusing on today's discussion, which is the refugee community or the asylum seeking community. Why is deporting them not a good idea?
To put it plainly, and as I was explaining earlier when we were discussing what the term refugee even means, mm-hmm. is that a refugee is a person who has fled their country because they're at risk of serious human rights violations and persecution. So to send them back to a country where you know that they're going to face harm, and mm-hmm. not just like, it's not minor harm, it's in a country like Myanmar, which is currently also, you know, quite politically unstable, you're sending them back to suffer. And why would we do that? That's such an inhumane thing to do and shows a real lack of compassion and understanding of someone's human rights.
Absolutely. Now, you also brought up legal and policy changes that we need. What do you think are some of these policy changes that would make Malaysia a more progressive country when it comes to handling refugees and when it comes to their detention sort of... So the detention policies that they have right now?
So to just link back to the last question that we talked mm-hmm. about is to, in all our immigration policies and procedures, to adopt a principle of non-refoulement, which is basically don't deport people under any circumstance. But what I'd like to highlight here, instead of rattling off a list of policy changes that are possible, I'd like to highlight some of our international obligations. So these are things that Malaysia has already promised. Mm-hmm. And I think if we are following through on these, necessary legal and policy changes will follow. So first, like I mentioned earlier, uphold the pledge made to secure the seat on the United Nations Human Rights Council, which is to protect the rights of the most vulnerable communities. Mm-hmm. Malaysia has ratified the UNCRC, which is the Convention on the Rights of the Child, as well as the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW, which is probably something people say more often. And mm-hmm. both of these conventions have issued an authoritative guidance that says that detention of people seeking asylum is a violation of child rights and women's rights. So as a signatory to that, we do have an obligation to not detain women and children. And another international obligation is that as an ASEAN member, Malaysia has an ongoing commitment to the ASEAN Declaration on the Rights of Children in the Context of Migration, which has like a regional plan, which has a step-by-step process towards addressing the issue of immigration detention. And I'd also like to highlight, in a positive note, that many of our parliamentarians do indicate our commitment to respect and uphold the human rights of all, including people who migrate. I think in November of last year, the Malaysian Prime Minister himself said that the government is responsible for protecting all children in the country, regardless of nationality, race, religion, birth, or other statuses, and that we have to take into account their best interests, especially in responding to the needs of vulnerable children, including refugees and refugee children. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, at the recent parliamentary session, stated that Malaysia, at an ASEAN level, Malaysia is one of the most consistent and outspoken countries. So we are saying the right things. We recognize that there's a need to protect these people, protect refugees. So this needs to be just followed through with some strong legal and policy change. And first and foremost, that needs to start with ending child immigration detention. Children don't belong in immigration depots and they should never be detained. So it would be great to see some follow through with the ATD pilot and making that ATD pilot strong and comprehensive.
Do you think refugees should be given the chance to assimilate into our community, study here, work here, and pay taxes in Malaysia?
Short answer, yes. Long answer is mm-hmm. that there's been much global research to show that there's a really good positive impact on all parties involved when mm-hmm. communities allow refugees the chance to assimilate. So in a Malaysian context, I'm referring to some research done a few years back in 2019, I think, by the think tank Ideas. And they published research that showed that granting refugees the right to work in Malaysia would have positive impacts on both the economy and public finances. So to rattle off a few numbers, they suggested that, and keep in mind this is published in 2019, so mm-hmm. by the time 2023 rolls around, granting refugees the right to work could contribute over $3 billion to our GDP, increase our tax revenues, and that the employment and wages, and I love this point because this is always the argument that comes up, is that people are worried that if we let refugees and asylum seekers assimilate into our community, that we won't have jobs.
Right.
But the Ideas research actually directly contradicts that and says that the employment and wages of Malaysians would benefit, and refugees could help create over 4,000 jobs for Malaysians.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's absolutely fantastic and something that, you know, I think the Malaysian government definitely needs to consider. That same note, right, when you mentioned that this narrative that people are always worried that the refugees or even migrants and whatnot are here to steal our jobs. And we've seen the level of xenophobia on display by the Malaysian public, especially throughout the pandemic over the past couple of years. You know, they were the ones being blamed for the spread of the disease. Even whenever someone tries to help the refugee community, you know, I've seen heartbreaking remarks such as, you know, it's so ridiculous. If you have so much food to spare, why not just give Malaysians instead? Why give foreigners that are coming in? You see celebration by some parts of the Malaysian masses when refugees are being hunted down, when all sorts of slurs are being thrown at refugees on social media and whatnot. What would you tell Malaysians who think this way?
I think, you know, something that always comes to mind when I'm thinking about this is that there's a trend that we're noticing increasingly is that from a global perspective, it's pretty evident that international perception of Malaysia is increasingly recognizing our country as one that's discriminatory, intolerant, and inhospitable to refugees, coming back to my earlier point, in comparison to our neighboring countries, who are stepping up to implement alternatives and end immigration detention, it's disappointing to see, and it's quite frankly quite embarrassing. And I think Malaysians should reflect on some positive values that they associate or that are widely associated with Malaysia. Dashrin, mm-hmm. do you think you could list like one or two for me?
Okay, kindness and diversity comes to mind.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, same. That's the same positive image of Malaysia that I'd like to believe in, and you know, mm-hmm. a Malaysia that's diverse and tolerant and friendly mm-hmm. and altruistic, like you said, or hospitable. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to reflect on these values and then think, are we collectively responding to refugees in a way that's reflective of and true to these values? I don't think so. But it's an important reflection to do. And I think something else that is helpful as well is to like you said, there's so many hateful comments and so much like almost hateful joy at the misery and the suffering of refugees. And I think it's important first to kind of interrogate why we feel such animosity. What's the root of our anger? And who has influenced us to direct our anger at this minority group? And what do they stand to gain from our anger? I think we'll find that often the root of our anger is not necessarily targeted at people who migrate. So why are we taking it out on them? It's not easy to answer these questions, but that's the kind of personal reflection that's needed to kind of address the public attitudes and xenophobia. And it's always important to remember that our society, like any society, is only as strong as how we support those in the most vulnerable situations. So we must do better.
Indeed. All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, Hannah, would you have a final message for us?
Yes, I do have my final message. And that's to say that let's reflect on our immigration detention. It's expensive in terms of personal and community harm, as well as economic cost. It's been proven time and time again that if we diverted resources into alternatives to detention and focused on integrating refugees and asylum seekers into society, that we'd be working towards a healthier, more sustainable society. The government must reconsider its current policies and systems, which are arbitrary, harmful, costly, and ineffective, and come up with alternatives that particularly protect people in vulnerable situations. And quite simply, my final message is that detention is not the answer.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today. That was Hannah Jambunathan, Community and Engagement Organizer at the International Detention Coalition, IDC. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.